This is Laura Deirdre with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Steve McGid, Chief Medical Information Officer at Hospital for Special Surgery and Professor of Clinical Medicine at Weill Cornell in New York City. Dr. McGid, thank you so much for being here. Could you please tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Absolutely, of course. So thank you for having me. I am born and bred in New York City, in Manhattan, and just ventured out 4 years for college, and I trained at the Cornell New York Presby. I have been a rheumatologist over the last 40 some odd years, and I became interested in informatics when the CIO about 15 or more years ago asked me to help with the implementation of a particular medical record, and I told him I knew nothing about informatics or computers, and he said, perfect, you're the one. And so that began my career in informatics, because I certainly knew the folks at the Hospital for Special Surgery, and I've chaired various committees in the Vanna Research Center and Quality, and currently co-chair the Quality Committee in the hospital. Hospital for Special Surgery is a unique place. It's a small hospital in the heart of Manhattan that's devoted only to musculoskeletal conditions. We were founded over 150 years ago around the Civil War, and we've been the number one program in orthopedics for 11 years or so, and very highly rated in rheumatology, magnet hospital for the last five designations. And although we only have 205 beds, we do 35,000 surgeries in 21, I think, ORs. So it's a high-powered place. It's academic. It's affiliated with Cornell Medical College, Weill Cornell. We have some 300 medical staff, 118 residents and fellows, and over 200 advanced practitioners. And it's a very complicated place because when some hospitals have OB and peds and ENT, we have hand, we have foot, we have spine, we have sports, and many other subspecialties of orthopedics, with all the complexities of needs of informatics and medical records. I should also mention that although I'm the one who's having the privilege of speaking to you today, I really am representing the work of countless others in the IT department. And so I'll accept responsibility for all the mistakes I make, but they should get all most of the credit.
Awesome.
So that's about who I am and where I live.
Thank you so much, Dr. McGid. I think that's a really great overview, and I appreciate you again being here today. Now, what are your top priorities, and how do you anticipate they're going to change in the coming year?
Yeah, well, being in New York City during the pandemic, it was not my intention to have a top priority of COVID, but unequivocally, that has sucked the air out of the room. And although we seem to be doing well now in terms of the way the infections are going and the percentage of positivities in New York, it's by no means over. And so over the last year, the priorities were to respond to the dramatic tragedy that befell our city. And we essentially dropped everything as a specialty hospital and became a COVID hospital. The IT department really needed to focus on making the leadership team accessible to each other, putting in all the communication tools, the dashboards, and the bandwidth that we needed to run the hospital and what clinics were running. Initially, we were taking care of emergency patients only. We converted our ambulatory care center into an orthopedic triage center with an agreement that all orthopedic patients in the entire city in an emergency situation would be triaged to us, so we could focus on that and thus freeing up beds for the rest of the city to take care of COVID patients. But very rapidly it became clear that there were many fewer accidents and emergencies in orthopedics because people weren't on the roads or out of their house. And so we essentially became a COVID hospital with overflow from New York Presbyterian, which is our next door neighbor. We all of a sudden had to work from home, as most places did, and we had to put in the infrastructure for that. We had 2,000, we had zero people practically working from home before COVID, and we went to over 2,000 a day. We had to put in increasing bandwidth. We had to get laptops to people, allow them to access us through Citrix storefront or VPN, and put soft phones in any number of changes. And as with most places, we instituted telemedicine, and that was phenomenally successful, not only early on, but continues to be. As recently as this week, we've had something like 1,500 MD visits with telemed and 1,000 rehab telemed visits a week. And so that remains a focus of ours. We had to build a new hospital at that time. We turned all our ICUs, we turned all our ORs into ICUs. We put telemetry in, we put all new order sets in. We had to receive patients from our next door neighbor, New York Presbyterian, had to orchestrate the proper IT communication links. Thankfully, we were able to retransition back to a specialty orthopedic hospital in rheumatology, musculoskeletal, physiatry, and for the most part, we're functioning close to where we are. Except if you can work from home, you're still able to, and if you prefer a telemed visit, you can still do that. And so that's been very, very important to the way we've been operating. Now we have focused our efforts on vaccinations, as many hospitals have. We're fortunate to have the appropriate freezers, and we're designated to be a center for that. We have vaccinated employees, staff, MDs, and some patients, although that focus has changed. We're now also setting up an entire shop out in Queens at a high school to vaccinate neighborhood community members. So that has been a focus, changing our EHR, all the registration, using Salesforce in the local community to register patients and keep track of them. And so in terms of how it's going to change over next year, that really depends upon what the status of the variants are and how things will be with the need for vaccines and things like that. And hopefully we will not have to go back to being a COVID hospital. I should mention another priority, and that's the 21st Century CARES Act. Many of you will know about that, or if not most of you. And those of you who know it know that there are 35,000 plus pages of federal regulation, which became really came to attention during COVID, and very few hospitals were able to focus enough attention on it. And it's an act that, amongst other things, is aimed at decreasing information blocking and increasing operability and increasing patients and medical workers' ability to share data. It's got some teeth in its regs, so $1 million in penalties for some of the regs that if you're not following them properly. And basically, there are three or four major versions or major parts to this. The first is a set of elements that's called the USCDI, which are a variety of elements that have to be released to the patient, essentially in real time, generally understood to mean through the portal, which initially included things like patient reports. So radiology reports, lab reports, pathology reports would have to be released to the patient. And that took a huge amount of work to determine which reports and how. We are going live that went live in December in our hospital. We are very soon going live next week with patient notes being released to the portal, and that's a whole other area of complexity. As those of us on this podcast probably understand, notes used to be written for the doc, And matter of fact, when I went into practice, I took practice over from an old timer. He had one index card for every patient, and that index card could have spanned 20 years of care for a patient, and he'd have one line for each visit because he knew the patients and it was for him. Now, needless to say, patient notes are for insurance companies and lawyers and all sorts of other quality measures. But now the focus is going back to the patient, where I think many of us believe it should be, that the notes are for the patient and the patient owns their medical record. But that requires docs and prescribers and authors of notes to really understand the new audience. And so the concept from the government's point of view involves patients in their care. They can correct mistakes if you inadvertently make one. And it really gets them to understand their illnesses better. And that's the concept behind it. From an author's point of view, there needs to be a whole lot of training. And there are exceptions to releasing notes. That has to be built in to the system as well. Next part of the 21st century cures has to do with being able to exchange information between caregivers and institutions. And so something called direct addresses have to be built in. And there's a whole way of sharing a variety of information through FHIR APIs. And that's yet one other due date that we have to have all these things up and running. And then lastly, admission, discharge, and transfer notifications to appropriate people. If you're the primary care physician and your patient is being discharged, then that would be transmitted to you almost in real time electronically. Finally, what I'm most excited about and is always a top priority is supporting the strategic plans of the hospital. We have a particular roadmap that goes out to 2025. And the elements of it really involve the fact that technology is the backbone of almost everything that we do from a strategic point of view. It's essential to our success. We're in the process of creating a digital experience for the pre-patient. Some people refer to them as customers. I don't. But we want to connect with every person we serve digitally if we can and take them through the entire experience of being a pre-patient, giving wellness advice, rehab exercises for athletic injuries. If they become a patient, then to make sure that we're engaging them through electronic means to send them questionnaires, do risk assessments, taking them through the entire patient experience should they need surgery, and then out the back, and for rehab, giving them telehealth follow-ups. And so that's certainly in the top of my mind. And this will allow us to use pathways to take into account individual variations in patient health, to do calculations and algorithms and learning on what makes a good a patient likely to have a successful surgery, which patients need some additional work, and to give some risk assessments. And all of this is enabled by electronic elements that we are calling from the patients through questionnaires or through problem lists, medication lists, et cetera. So I'm excited and nervous about a lot, I guess. I hope that answers most of your questions.
Yeah. Thank you so much for going through that with us. It sounds like you had, you know, an amazing journey last year in transforming the hospital to make sure you were supporting the community, whether it was with taking on additional orthopedic patients and then becoming more of a COVID hospital to care for patients with COVID-19, and then coming back to more of a regular business as usual. Although, as you mentioned, you know, many people are still working from home or remotely, and being able to support that too. It sounds like it was a lot to do on your end. So great to hear about that story. Before we wrap up here, I wanted to ask you quickly about leadership. What are your top three pieces of advice for clinical leaders today?
Well, hang in there is the first piece of advice. But actually, you folks were nice enough to interview me back in 2018, and I reviewed what I said there, and I'll recycle that now and add some others. First, do no harm. All of us in IT are clinicians. You know, many of us don't know it. I happen to have an MD after my name, but we all take care of patients, all of us. And it's really important not to do harm. It's really important to put patients at the center of your attention. And those are the most important things that we do. And don't underestimate how much you count in care for patients. As leaders, we translate between the operations folks, the patients, the clinical folks, and IT, and that's huge. What I would add to what I said back then is I learned a lot during COVID. It's really important to be aware of your environment. Things change really quickly out there during COVID for sure. Certainly the landscape economically in medicine is changing. We need to be very agile and respond promptly. We spent a lot more time in meetings before COVID, and we spend a lot more time being much more agile now. We try to pivot on immediately when we need to change direction. 80-20 rule: perfection is the enemy of the good. Get a minimally viable product and appropriate, you know, in the appropriate scenarios, and just, you know, try not to get bogged down. We have to be much more agile. You always needed to be an agent of change. You know, John Cotter is probably a name everybody knows, but it's really important to remember lots of what clinical leaders do is change management and making sure people know why there's change, creating a burning platform, advocating for the change, and listening to people when they're having trouble adopting to change. I think the last thing is governance is really important. There's too many squeaky wheels that try to go around governance, but there are always exceptions to that. So my advice is go through governance except when you don't want to or need to. So there's some balance that has to be there. So, and those are my words of wisdom.
Well, Dr. McGinn, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I really appreciate your expertise here and going through a lot of what you went through in the past year, and as well as providing this great advice. Number one, obviously, do no harm. And I love your thought that everyone in IT is a clinician and they're caring for patients no matter what their role is. You know, number two is always being an agent for change and being in the clinical leadership role, leading that, I think is a fantastic way to look at things. And then number three, knowing that governance is important, but there are always exceptions. And so using that governance when it makes sense, and then figuring out how to push things through otherwise when it does not. So thank you so much for being here today. I'm glad that you were here, and I'm looking forward to connecting with you again in the future.
It would be my pleasure, and thank you for having me, and I really appreciate the chance. I love reading and seeing your publication, so thank you.